Chapter 17, The Ever-Present Christ. There is a power called Spirit, or the Christ, and it does the work. Talking about the Christ will not bring God or Christ to bear upon your problem. The Christ must be realized. Christ must be felt. Then we really can say, I can leave it with God. I can leave it with truth. As we become convinced within our consciousness of the truth, that conviction, which is realization, makes the demonstration. Our object is to develop this awareness, this consciousness of truth, or this sense of omnipresence. So our object is to develop this sense of omnipresence. As this is developed, we no longer work specifically on problems. As a matter of fact, we do not have specific problems on which to work. Life begins to unfold in a normal and harmonious manner. We have only to maintain ourselves in that atmosphere of the Spirit for that flow to come through, the flow of divine life. When we are confronted with problems, then, it is necessary to get back within ourselves until we get that feeling of the presence. As you think of God, the one life, omnipresent as your own life, God, the one mind, omnipresent as your own mind, you will not have the sense of two-ness, or even the customary sense of God as omnipresent. God in you. Over here somewhere, separate and apart from it. In thinking of omnipresence, think of it as your own being. The allness of God, the infinity of God, omnipresent as your individual being. Then there is no sense of separation or division. The Christ is something which is controlling your being and your destiny. All you have to do is to realize this Christ or gain the conscious awareness of it. Since everyone has it, you do not have it within you, and you do not have it without you. You have it as your being. When you talk about the activity of the Christ, you are not talking about a within or a without. If it acted just within our consciousness, there would be no reaching from one to another. It is within, and it is a without. It is a within and it is a without. So he changes subject here. What is sin? In spiritual teaching, of course, there is no such thing as sin in and of itself, because there is only God expressing its infinite being. Sin, therefore, is a human term and defines more or less a violation of a code of conduct. Rightly speaking, sin is a violation of any law. That law might be a moral law, it might be a legal law, inasmuch as we consider stealing a sin. If we understood our spiritual identity, everything would flow through. And if it did, there would be no need of having personal possessions or personal ownership. In which case, you would be welcome to whatever I had, and I would be welcome to whatever you had. And that is all there would be to it. It would be a recognition that the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. And son, all that I have is thine. The master recognized this when he walked through the field plucking the corn. When he was rebuked for it, he referred to David in the temple eating the shewbread, which was also against the rules. I suppose that he meant that the corn in the field was for the use of the disciples or anybody else who had need of it. That all sounds really nice until it's your cornfield. Another human code of conduct relates to marriage. Marriage has been established as a human institution because it is a protection to society against the unpredictable nature of men and women. Such laws are designed to protect men, women, and especially children. Under spiritual dominion, there would be no need for these laws, for the simple reason that under the government of spirit, no one would ever do anything contrary to spiritual right. So that leaves us with the question, then what is sin? If we forget human law and consider only spiritual government, we would have to say that sin is anything that takes us outside the government of God, the government by spiritual instinct or intuition or spiritual law. In other words, sin violates the truth of spiritual oneness. If we desire money, that would be sin, since that would be a violation of spiritual truth of omnipresence, the oneness of God appearing as the fullness of individual being. To believe that we are separate and apart from the infinity of our supply would be a sin. It would be a sin against the Holy Spirit. It really would be a sin even to desire supply. In fact, desire in any form would be a sin, because it would be an acknowledgement of less than self-completeness. And of course, self spelled with the capital S really means God or all completeness, here and now, individually expressed. Any sense, then, of lack or limitation is sin. Any sense of separation from good would be sin. You might say that any unhappiness would be sin, since it would be based on a sense of our own incompleteness, and spiritual truth reveals that we are already complete. We are the fullness of God's glory. If we say, I am the fullness of God's glory made evident, and then we are unhappy or desire something or someone, we have nullified the sense of completeness, and in that we have sinned. We are taught that the word sin comes from the Greek, meaning missing the mark. Missing the mark of spiritual perfection. That is exactly what this would indicate, that sin is any sense that we entertain of a separation from our good. Let us consider the word God in relation to cause and effect. To illustrate, let us think of a mahogany piano. We would not say that there is mahogany in the piano. Mahogany is formed or appears as a piano. Or we might take as another illustration a solid gold fountain pen, like maybe one of those cross print pens. Again, we would not say that there is gold in the fountain pen. No, gold is formed as a fountain pen. You might say there is ink in the fountain pen, yes, but the ink and the fountain pen are not one and the same. If you say God, in effect, it is like saying that there is ink in the fountain pen, or gas in the pipe. You have two substances. Therefore, in that sense, there is no God in any effect. That is the objection to the term God in man. Certainly there is no God in man. When Jesus spoke of the Father within me, he was not making of himself some kind of a hollow tube in which God was located. He did not mean that statement in a literal sense. It was his way of referring to God as his consciousness, God as his being, God as his life, but not God in his life, not God in his body, not even God in his mind. How can you get infinity into anything? It is literally impossible to encase infinity in anything. You could not get infinity in this whole world, but infinity can embrace the world. Infinity can appear as a world. To state that God appears as individual being is to have God and individual being as one. It is like saying that whatever the quality of gold is, that is the quality of the fountain pen. Since the gold and the fountain pen are inseparable and indivisible, they are one. As essence or substance, the fountain pen appearing as the form into which the gold is molded. Or, in the illustration of the piano, all that mahogany is, the mahogany piano must be, since mahogany and piano are one. But you certainly would not say, "There is mahogany in the piano." The only way you could say that is if you had a piano and then put a little piece of mahogany inside it. But then you would not necessarily have a mahogany piano. Nor can you say, "I and my Father are one," if you merely mean that there is a little bit of God somewhere in us. God, the infinite life, individually appears as the life of your being and of mind. God, life, is not in your life, nor is God life in your body. But God is the substance of your being. God is not visible. God is not definable. God is not a limited being, person, essence, or substance. God is the totality or infinity of spiritual being. Let no one try to reason out what God is, because it cannot be done. On the same basis, let no one try to reason out what man is. It cannot be done. It is playing with words, and it is cheating yourself of any hope of ever finding heaven or harmony. The only way you will ever know God is through spiritual sense. The only way you will ever know man is through that same spiritual sense. Trying to reason out the truth, fathom it with the mind, or think it out is pure nonsense, and only defeats your purpose. So I guess we know here that reason will not take you to God. Spiritual consciousness, the seventh sense. It is not that we are to accept anything blindly, but we are certainly not to seek God through intellectual reasoning. The things of God are foolishness to man, that is, to mortal man. Cease he from man whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of? Do not look at a mortal man and hope to find God. Okay. If you do look to mortal man, you will not find healing, because the spiritual world does not heal human beings. Wow, what a line that is. The spiritual world does not heal human beings. So you can put that to rest, ever trying to heal a human being, yourself or others. The spiritual teaching reveals the Son of God, the Christ being, and it does not do that through human reasoning or through your thinking. The Son of God is revealed through spiritual discernment. Do not permit yourself to be cheated out of the wonderful glories of heaven on earth by relying on your intellect. You cannot achieve heaven on earth with the thinking process. But beyond the five physical senses, beyond the sixth sense, or intuition, there is a seventh sense which operates above the intuition. That seventh sense is spiritual discernment or spiritual consciousness. That is why, in our treatment, instead of voicing statements, we listen for that still small voice, and it reveals to us spiritual being, God appearing as an individual. What does he look like? I have never seen him with my eyes, but I have felt him in my innermost being. I have felt the God being of many people many times. In this healing work, if this healing work could be done humanly or with human thinking, there would not be so little of it in the world. Instead of a few dozen practitioners, we would have millions of them. Jesus himself could not train more than a few to go out and do healing work. Why? Because it took a specially developed power, and that power is the power of spirit, not of the human mind. John beheld a wonderful vision of heaven. He saw the heaven while he was here on earth, right while he was here with us. He saw an incorporeal universe, a world without physical structure. He saw this through spiritual sense. He was able to see through what appears to us as a structural universe to that which is. And he saw it as it is in all its perfection. He saw it with that seventh sense, with spiritual consciousness. His vision revealed that this is a spiritual universe, that we are spiritual beings, and that this body is spiritual. This body is the temple of God, the temple of the Holy Spirit, just as it is described in the New Testament. This body is the temple of God, and it is indestructible. It is not our body that ages or changes. Our body is just as indestructible and spiritual as it was before Abraham was, and as it will be until the end of time. The change takes place not in our body, but in the human concept of body. Everyone, to some extent, is under the claim or belief of human consciousness. Remember, however, that you do not have a human mind of your own, nor a human consciousness. The human mind or human state of consciousness is a universal sense of separation from God. Actually, there is only one mind, which is the instrument of God. But there is a false or limited sense of that mind, which we call the human mind, or human consciousness. It is not really mind or consciousness, but a limited sense. It's a limited sense of the one infinite consciousness. Through that limited sense, you look at the body and see the changes that that limited sense depicts. You see where he's going with this? You can sum all this up in one paragraph. While we're living in the human mind, looking out from that mind, we see separation. We see division. We see opposites. We see good. We see bad. Young, old, healthy, sick, rich, poor. But in our meditation, if we let go of and can let go of these concepts, then we can stand still. We can rest back. We can wait upon the Lord. And that is when God reveals itself. That is when we feel omnipresence. And that feeling of omnipresence is realization. And that right there is the whole secret of healing. Let us suppose, for example, that you see a diamond, and looking at it, you mistake it for a rhinestone. Yet all the while, it is a diamond. Where does the rhinestone exist? Nowhere. See, you were going to say in the mind, weren't you? Where does the rhinestone exist? Nowhere. There is no rhinestone. What you are calling a rhinestone represents a finite, false concept of the perfect diamond. You accept your concept of the stone as truth until a diamond broker appraises the stone and tells you, "This is a diamond." What happens to your rhinestone? There never was a rhinestone. The stone is now and always has been a diamond. Your rhinestone has disappeared. But from where has it disappeared, since it never had any existence? There was nothing to disappear, since there never was a rhinestone. The rhinestone's only existence was as a belief or false sense of the diamond. In the same way, we are told that all of mortal experience, everything we see, hear, taste, touch, and smell, is illusion or a false concept. Does that mean that there is a real world and an unreal world? No. It means that this world is the world which was envisioned by John, envisioned, except that John had risen above the finite concept, so that he no longer saw it through the misperception that would make a rhinestone for a diamond. That is the basis of spiritual healing. The person who calls himself a patient is actually the Christ, the presence of God, spiritual man standing in all the fullness, all the glory of spiritual being and identity, actually God made manifest. Just as you were falsely seeing the diamond as a rhinestone, so you see the universal picture of mortal man, that man whose breath is in his nostrils, and who, according to Isaiah, is not to be accounted of. Your first reaction is to attempt to heal that man. The moment you seek to do that, it is as if you were to say, "I should like to change that rhinestone into a diamond." But you cannot do that because there is no rhinestone there. The diamond is already a diamond. The healing takes place when you yourself recognize that the patient is not out there as an individual to be healed. The patient is a false concept in universal belief. The minute you know that truth, your patient should be healed. Ultimately, your patient is healed through knowing the truth. Sometimes when you know that truth the first time, he is healed. But sometimes, for one reason or another, you have to know it 100 times. Among many metaphysicians, the belief persists that you must heal something or somebody, or change him, or reform him, or correct him. The only healing, reforming, or correcting which has to be done is that which is done in the thought of the beholder. That means in your thought and my thought. If we could catch this point, then regardless of the name or nature of the form of error, an error actually has no more existence than the snake in the rope, or the rhinestone in the diamond. If we could do that, healing would be instantaneous. Someday, we who remain with this long enough will develop the spiritual sense sufficiently to bring about quick healings, and ultimately instantaneous healings, since all that it requires is this awareness. There is only one thing that will compel us to refrain from giving somebody a treatment. That is to realize instantly that no matter what the picture is, it is not true, since Christ, the spiritual man, the Son of God, is all that is there. When that is your reaction, you have instantaneous or quick healing. Nothing less than that is spiritual healing. Spiritual healing is not using the power of God to get rid of sin or get rid of disease. Spiritual power is the realization of God omnipresent as individual being. When once you can recognize that God is omnipresent as individual being, you will never give a treatment to the appearance, but you will instantly be alert to recognize, I am not deceived by appearances. Christ interprets itself. The vision of the infinite way is that we do not go out into the world trying to correct it or improve it. Let us not have any fear of or for the world, or any sense of the world's needing saving or reforming, since all that has to do with the universal concept of a world. We are not asked to leave the world. We are asked to be in the world, but not of it. We are to be in the world, but we are to be no part of its fears, its hates, its enmities, or its jealousies. Ye are the light of the world. No one can be a light of the world who has any fear, doubt, criticism, judgment, hate, envy, jealousy, or malice. The light of the world is that individual who, through spiritual discernment, has seen that the universe is spiritual, perfect, and harmonious. This he can only see or feel through an inner spiritual light or spiritual discernment. So, just taking this chapter so far, someone comes to us with a problem. Will you pray for me? Yes, I will work for you. I am with you. And then we put down the phone, or we put down our computer, and we sit in our meditation chair. Now, why am I here? Is it to fix somebody out there? Is it to heal somebody or some situation? No. Nope. That's the illusion. That's the picture that's trying to trick me. But I'm not going to be tricked. I'm not going to. I'm going to let that go. Now, why am I here? I am here to know the truth, because the truth will set me free. Knowing the truth will set me free. So let me be still. What is needed here is the feeling of omnipresence. The feeling of omnipresence will dissolve any concept. Trust me, when you feel omnipresence, it's just so wow that it'll dissolve anything you were thinking about at the moment. So, Father, reveal omnipresence. And then I listen, I wait. I have to have that realization of omnipresence. And I wait for it. And it'll come, maybe not the first time. Remember, Joel said he practiced for 8 months, 12 times a day. And then it happened. He felt omnipresence. We get frustrated and, well, we're just beside ourselves if we don't feel it the very first time we sit down. Some things have to be cultivated. Some things you can't have right off the bat. Joel's illustration is, you can't learn to play the piano with one or two lessons. Maybe you could do chopsticks, but I doubt even that. Now, as I've said before, when I first was learning to play the guitar, I didn't have any calluses. And so I had to practice and practice, and it hurt. It hurt my fingers. But I kept at it because I love music. So, eventually, I learned how to change chords without looking. Used to be I'd have to look at it and place this finger here, that finger there, and that one there. After a while, I could do it without looking. The point that I'm making is, we sit down to meditate, we want to learn how to heal. I don't know why. Maybe you feel a calling. Maybe it's just something you're interested in the principles. I don't know. But we sit down to meditate, to practice these healing principles. The first thing that comes to mind is, what am I supposed to do? Oh, yeah. I'm supposed to look at this error and look right through it. What is this error I'm seeing? Is it error? Is there an error? Maybe there is no error. Maybe it's just a concept. So I'm not going to try to fix an error. I am going to cease from man whose breath is in his nostrils. I am going to cease from error. I'm going to rest. Dear God, please reveal your omnipresence. My omnipresence. Please reveal omnipresence. And one of these fine mornings, or afternoons, or evenings, or nights, after one of those meditations, bam, we feel omnipresence. It's right there. It's upon me. I feel it. It's real. So now we know what is real and what is appearing as error. And so we don't fight error, we don't try to overcome it, we don't try to heal it, we don't try to do anything with it. We loose it and let it go. Go on about your business. You're nothing. Now, we do attempt to lift ourselves into a state of consciousness where we can rest back until omnipresence reveals itself. And when that happens, the error, the picture, is dissolved. The attempt to reform or govern and control other people's lives will not work. You were not ready for spiritual teaching, and I was not ready for it until the time came. And no one could hasten that readiness by preaching to us, preaching at us, or by shoving books in front of us and asking us to read them, or leaving them on the table for us, hoping we would pick them up and read them. What we are called on to do is not to preach the gospel in the sense of going out and talking it, but to preach the gospel in the sense of living it, showing forth what it is doing in our experience. Then, strangely enough, we do not have to tell anyone about it. They can see it in our whole being, and certainly they can see any health or supply that we show forth. So we never really need to speak. When we find our God in secret, that secret will be shouted from the housetops. That's a heck of a line. We never really need to speak. Let us then begin with that knowledge. Let our relationship with God be a sacred and secret one. Let it be made manifest outwardly only through the appearance of the new harmony of our being and of our body. Not only do we bless the world that way, but we bless the entire spiritual movement. The world is hungry for truth. It is merely looking for someone to show it forth so that it too can find it. Spiritual power is a power that is generated or made manifest through our awareness of God as one power. One power, good. That is the only power. In other words, spiritual power comes with your recognition, not that you are going to give a treatment to remove the snake from the rope, but that the rope is a rope. There is no snake there. You need not say a prayer or give a treatment to remove a snake when all the time it is a rope. That is spiritual power. In individual experience, then, that means that as we walk up and down the world, realizing God as the infinite nature of our being, we do not look out at the world and strive to save it, or change it, or reform it. Our spiritual power consists in looking through the human being to the divinity at the center of his being, and thereby greeting the Christ as individual being. You never, ever have to say that out loud. You do not have to mention it to anyone. In a store, on a streetcar, in an automobile, wherever you may be, if you do not pay attention to the outer appearances, but always realize Christ, God, at the center of all being, the reality of all being, and realize that behind that mask is the real man, the man of God's creating. That is spiritual power. Let us add to the great sum total of spiritual power that is abroad in the world. It is almost incredible when you think back on the experiences of some of the early workers and realize how many people they healed as they walked up and down the streets. They did not wait to be asked to give a treatment. As soon as they met with deformity, dishonesty, or alcoholism, they looked right through it to the center of being and there beheld the Christ. They knew what was appearing as this human being was a false concept, an illusion, but not an illusion out there. The appearance out there did not fool them, and in that way they brought about healing. Well, that is exactly the same way in which a lecturer or a teacher on a platform brings about healing in his audience. He does not take pity on someone he sees in the audience who is sinning or is sick. He does not recognize the error by saying, "Well now, we will just bring God down here to do something about that." That is not a healing state of consciousness. That is not the Christ consciousness. The Christ state of consciousness looks right through the sinner and right through the disease and says, "What did hinder you? Pick up your bed and walk." It beholds spiritual being out there where the false concept seems to be. And it knows that that false concept is not out there. Do you remember the illustration of the mirage on the desert? The person who sees a mirage on the desert as if it were an actuality to be surmounted is afraid to go forward through what appears to be water. The one who recognizes that the mirage is but a belief in thought, an optical illusion, drives right along in his car and pays no attention to the water on the road. We have to come into that actual consciousness where we can do the same thing. Someone comes to us with a disease, "Will you pray for me?" We have to be able to look at it like the water on the road, and within ourselves, remember, we are looking at concept, at illusion. And so we go on our merry way. I think a lot more healings would be done that way than all this struggle and striving to know things with your mind. All right. When you begin to realize that, since God is the only creative principle of the universe, you are not dealing with sinful, diseased, or dying humanity. You, then, have the vision of Paul. Spiritual being is the house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. You deal only with that false concept which we recognize to be a complete illusion in mortal thought, and not an entity or identity out there. Then you are the light of the world. Then you are the healing Christ. Then do you bring spiritual power to bear in this world. When one practitioner can bring about the healing of many hundreds of people through individual awareness, can you not realize what would happen if there were a million of them? Think what a million practitioners could do. A million practitioners all motivated by spiritual power. That is, by the power to recognize that God is the center of all being. We read in newspapers and magazines about spiritual power and about utilizing spiritual power in this age. We shall never utilize any of it, however, if we think of it as a good power that we are going to apply to an evil person or condition. This is just as benighted an idea as it is to pray to God to reform a bad man or offer up a prayer to heal a sick child. If God knew anything about the evil man or the sick child, he would have done something about it long before anyone did any praying. All the things we blame on God, God has nothing to do with them. Spiritual power lies in the awareness of God as omnipresent, as the presence appearing as individual being. You can begin to utilize spiritual power any moment that you like. All you have to do is to adopt the first commandment of Moses and the commandment that Jesus added to it, which is also an Old Testament commandment revised. There is but one power. Acknowledge no other power but God, and see God as omnipresent, all individual being. Recognize that good is the only power and evil is not a power. Evil does not exist as a power, but as an illusion. The second commandment, love thy neighbor as thyself, means if you believe that you yourself are spiritual, or that your mother is, or your child is, you should then love your neighbor. And that means the whole world, with the same love. Know that God is just as much the reality of this person's being as of that person's being. In other words, know that God is the reality of universal being, and that there is no being separate and apart from God's being. Then you are utilizing spiritual power. When you sit down in your home in the morning to do this work, you probably think of it in connection with yourself, your family, your business associates, your friends, or with anyone with whom you come into personal contact. And it is right that this should be so. Unless we can really begin to see this truth operating in our immediate circle, we shall not see it operate in the wider circle. We must be able to demonstrate it here where we are before we can expect to see it demonstrated in the far-off places or in the deeper problems of human existence. Some time during the day or some time during the night, sit down and give earnest thought to this great truth of loving your neighbor as yourself, recognizing God as the life of all spiritual being, recognizing the one mind as governing the spiritual creation. Stay with that vision of God as the actual reality, presence, and power of all spiritual creation, and then let that truth govern what we call the concept or outer condition. Spiritual power begins with an individual, and actually it ends there. If we utilize spiritual power for the realization of God as omnipresence, we then find that it appears here, there, and the other place, and gradually it spreads until its light eliminates the darkness on the face of the earth, which would be the Holy Spirit, wouldn't it? Moving over the face of the deep. All right, that chapter is specifically so that you will remember that you're not giving a treatment to anyone or anything out there. Your treatment is to yourself, so that you can remember what you see out there is not what is there. Nothing was made, says God. Nothing was made without Him. Nothing was made that was made. Kind of tricky language to describe that what we see is not what's there. Now, please do not condemn yourself or put yourself down or do not feel negative about yourself if you're not experiencing this. This takes work. Now, he says the first year or two takes a lot of work because we're constantly seeing error and we want to fix it. We want to improve it. We want to apply principles to make it better. So it takes a while to first get to the place where we can say, oh, I don't have to do anything about that. Wow, what a lot of work I did for nothing. But it was actually not for nothing, because it brought you to the place where you can realize I didn't have to do any of that work. The work I have to do is in knowing the truth within myself until it lifts me into the atmosphere of spirit. And there, I can stand still and I can behold. Spirit reveals its own omnipresence. And when that happens, you will know, oh, wow, it's not up to me to know omnipresence. It's up to omnipresence to reveal itself. And so that'll get you in a receptive state of consciousness. And in that receptivity, you can have the pearl of great price. Does all this make sense now? Okay. Let's see. Next week is Chapter 18, The Infinite Way. Huh? Have you discovered yet what the infinite way is? You know, the infinite way is not a set of rules or a set of principles. The infinite way is your own infinite consciousness. Your infinite consciousness is what will reveal itself as omnipresence. And so what is the infinite way? I am. That I within you, you carry it with you. That is the infinite way. And so you can say that to yourself, I am the infinite way. See, there never was a program. There was your inner God consciousness. That's the only infinite way there is. And that's the only master that there is. You know, I hear people talk about Joel, the master, and it just makes me, I don't know, makes me really uncomfortable. Anytime you make a man a master, you're in trouble. Because you're doing what Joel said never to do. You're putting the veil back on. So that we can all worship a man and put a statue of him on our dashboard in our car. There is a master. That master is within you. It is your own consciousness when it is free from self, the smallest self. And so that large-ass self is the only master there is. And when you follow that master within you, you will come home. You will come home to the living God. So don't bow down to any other master. Only that master within you. And the name of this book is The Master Speaks. And that's what he's talking about. The master within you. We can both read a page out of this book, and I'll come away with a principle that works for me. But you'll come away with a principle that works for you. And it may not be the same principle. That's part of the joy of this. Okay. Thank you for drawing this out. Omnipresence will solve all your problems. Not by itself. It needs your inner realization. When you have the inner realization, you actually feel omnipresence. You're feeling the master within. Follow that, and it will make you fishers of men, as it has with me. God bless. We're almost on the verge of spring here in the mountains. I think there's more snow coming to the eastern United States, probably north of here. God bless you, all of you. It's many years now, as many as 15 years some of you have been with me. And I appreciate that very, very much. My first teacher told me a long, long, long time ago. He said, in ages past, you might go your whole lifetime and never meet someone that's on the path that you are on. However, he said, in this day and age, we can meet someone sometimes several times a year. And so we don't have to suffer loneliness on top of all the things we're trying to realize. And so I thank you, all of you, because you're my friends. And I send you each a hug. Okay, see you next week. Amen.